Welcome to another edition of CFTV Live. I'm Jared Stansberry, joined, as always, by Jeff Woody. How's
it
going, man?
I'm late.
You are late.
I'm late.
You had important things to do, though.
Yeah, I got caught schmoozing at a conference with somebody.
So. That's okay. Sometimes you gotta push palms, you gotta schmooze people.
You gotta pay the bills.
Yeah, as always, and that's what we gotta do right here. CFTV Live is brought to you by our good friends over at Agrigold. You can look them up online at agrigold.com. Give them a call at 1-800-262-7333. Those people know corn.
That is what you call a professional transition, Mr. Stansberry. In all the ones we've done so far, that was the best setup.
Wow, yeah.
You're improving.
Thank you.
And Agrigold is benefiting from the nice, smooth transitions rather than a jump stop.
Definitely. Yeah, Agrigold, they know corn. 60-plus corn hybrids. 60.
6-0.
Yeah.
Not 1-6. 6-0.
That is a lot. 18 select soybean varieties, and they can do it in a lot of different states all across the United States of America. Once again, agrigold.com or give them a call. 1-800-262-7333. Agrigold. They know corn. So, what'd you compare this game to? A beige?
This game was a 2004 beige Toyota Camry.
Yeah.
That's what this game was. Everything was, and I mean that by everything was unspectacular. Mm-hmm. The mess-ups were unspectacular. The great plays were unspectacular. Texas's, they had two big plays they scored touchdowns on. Even those were unspectacular. It was just a blown coverage that somebody just runs by. And it was, it wasn't an extreme blown coverage, like somebody completely forgets, they fall over or something. Like, it was just there was a slight miscommunication. They adjusted play. Like, everything was just bleh. Like, that game, it wasn't awful, but it was just bleh. And I think the result, it was the result of probably a bleh week in practice, mm-hmm. where you get a good win, all your work finally pays off against San Jose State. And then you work that hard again because you want to get another taste of that, and you blow a lead against Baylor. And you still kind of have the benefit of the doubt, and you work hard because, we should have had that game, and you do that against Oklahoma State, and then you have another letdown. And then coming back the next week, there just isn't as much emotional juice mm-hmm. to push you through that week. And again, I use this quote all the time, whether I'm coaching or whether I'm talking about an athletics team. Tom Herman used it all the time. He used two quotes. One of them was Einstein's definition of insanity, and the other one was this, which you are what you repeatedly do. Excellence then is a habit and not an action. So if what Iowa State doesn't get right now is how to consistently do excellent, mm-hmm. they know how to occasionally do excellent. And that means they are not excellent. They're not a great team right now because they're not able to do it over and over and over and over again, regardless of circumstance. So this team, I think that was a preparation loss. That wasn't a execution loss, because you don't get blah from a great week of practice. You also don't get great from a blah week of practice. So I can almost guarantee you that it was pinpointed on an average to below average week.
And do you think that does having an average week, do you think that maybe the way the last two games went, does that play into it?
Or is it just like, okay. Absolutely plays into it. It plays into it 100%. And I think having the bye week where we have it is good to kind of take a step back and look, because you can go, okay, when we came out with the effort that we did during Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday on San Jose State week and Baylor week and Oklahoma State week, we were as good as we've ever been. Mm-hmm. And then we came out and went, for this Texas week, because we just weren't into it. We weren't invested into it. And you get that result. So it's a good time to kind of step back, get healthy, re-examine what you want out of your season. Because if you want to be blah, keep coming out as blah. Keep coming out average in practice. Keep coming out going through the motions. Go ahead. If you want to be average, be average. But having a chance to step back and assess what you require out of yourself is probably, it couldn't have come at a better time for Iowa State.
So how, as a player, how do you approach this bye week, I guess? What, like, how much are you getting in the film room? How much are you doing all kinds of that stuff to get ready for Kansas State? But at the same time, do you kind of want to step away from football for a second?
For me, I'm a football addict, so I can't. Not that I don't want to, I can't. Like, I can't not be watching or mm-hmm. participating in football. Like, I get jittery. I get withdrawal symptoms. No, but for me, it was... I think had I been taught more, because Alexander Robinson kind of showed me a little bit how to do how he does it, but how he does it is different than mine. His attitude's really, from a perspective on the game, is different than mine. So for me, older Jeff would have told younger Jeff how to do this, but senior Jeff, junior Jeff, what I would do the first week of the bye week is do a lot of self-scout on myself. What have I done? What do I need to do better? So I practice myself. Mm-hmm. And then the next week just becomes a normal game week. So that week, essentially, you get to work on you. You get to see where you're on certain plays, where you're for a running back, where your track is, where your hands are on blocking, where your cuts are, where your pad level is, where your eyes are on pass protection, where all of the stuff that you do, and just making sure that you do you as best you can.
Yeah.
And then the next week, then you can kind of assess with Kansas State. And in the meantime, you know, again, football junkie, football addict, you'll still watch Kansas State, or you'll still watch whomever you're playing coming out of the bye, because you have that film, and it's additional time. But for me, it was this week I got to look in the mirror for a full week. What am I doing, and what do I need to do better? And then the next week I get to come back and apply those things to Kansas State.
Would you say that's how most guys approach it?
I don't think so. And I think it's more a product of youth, because with a young or inexperienced or not fully fashioned team or fully fashioned football player, you're still looking forward. You're still looking like, what does Kansas State do? How do I beat Kansas State? What am I doing with that? But one of the things that you have to realize is, if you're not executing your own thing, it doesn't matter what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So for you, I don't think it's as common to look more introspectively in that first week of the bye. So this current week that we're in right now, I don't think it's as common as it should be. I think it's something that, I would assume Coach Campbell probably is pressing upon them to do.
Yeah, for sure. All right, are we ready to go to the screen, Adam?
So again, there, it was a 2004 beige Toyota Camry.
Yeah.
There was not a lot that was spectacular.
No, even I think back to the game, and it's like, I was just complacent the whole time, just even watching it. It's like, there's nothing to get excited about. There's nothing to be like
mad about.
It's just happening.
Yeah. This game, this is a thing.
Yeah.
That was that SB Nation is one of my favorite websites to just read little entertaining stories on. And one of the things they always do going, I think it's Fridays or Thursdays, is they do like a viewer guide of watch this, or you must watch this, and so each one of the time slots, the best game of that time slot, and then the next one of if you're free or something like that is the next one, and then the last one is this is a football game.
Yeah.
Like, it was a this is a football game. Like, cool.
Right.
These are playing football.
What? Okay. I guess.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, to me it looked like the biggest difference. Like, Iowa State has the skill position players to stick up with a team like Texas, but it's just up front. Like, they were just outmanned badly.
And I'm still, call me naive, call me optimistic, whatever. I still don't think that basically, if you are a Division I lineman, if you are the caliber and you can move around San Jose State, you can compete with Texas.
Yeah.
So Iowa State's offensive line isn't as bad as what they showed. I think what happens is, the same thing that happens to Iowa State in the fourth quarter, when you're looking at a team that you should beat and all of a sudden you're ahead, then you start going, I just better not lose this.
Yeah.
And then you stop thinking about what you're doing. Well, with an offensive line, when you're playing against a team like Texas has a ton of talent. Like, physically, you look at him, you go, whew, that's a big dude. It's an athletic defensive end. That's a really athletic, big defensive tackle. And you start trying to press in how to do that. It's similar to, you have an unskilled 7-foot center.
Mm-hmm. He's still intimidating.
He's still intimidating.
Yeah.
He's not as he may be good, but if you just play your game, you have advantages against that guy. But if you start trying to press and like thinking that you have to shoot fadeaway jumpers from 18 feet because he's 7 foot, you're shooting yourself in the foot. You're not able to execute at your capacity. And I think that's what Iowa State was doing is, inadvertently, they saw the Longhorn on the side of the helmet. They saw, you know, 6'3", 325 pounds, and moves like a rabbit. You think, I can't block this guy. I have to put my head down. I have to hit him harder. And then you miss. And then that happens again and again and again. So this is not a, in my mind, this is not a true talent issue.
Yeah.
Granted, talent makes everything easier. If you got Kelechi Osemele and Kelechi Osemele has a little bit worse technique than everybody else, fine. He still moves people around. Hayworth Hicks, terrible technique, threw people out the bar. But if you have adequate talent,
yeah,
as long as you prepare and execute with the consistent same mentality that you would any other opponent, you're still going to be adequate on the offensive line. And Iowa State was not adequate. What was it, 9 sacks, mm-hmm. 8 sacks? And they had, you know, Mike had 60, 70 yards rushing, something like that.
Yeah, and this is a Texas defense that had been
giving up 400 shredded. Yards a game.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not – they give up 600 and some yards to Oklahoma.
Well, and I think that even – you know, I think that Oklahoma State defensive line, they're mm-hmm. not any worse than Texas's.
They're not.
And, like, they – I mean, they owned them for a lot of the game.
Right, and that's – it's an attitude thing. Is yeah. You see, you know, that – you see that Longhorn, and you see him on tape, and you go – that guy's pretty good. I got to match this. So you have to rid yourself of that mentality of being like, big deal. You know, the whole Friday Night Lights, they bleed like we do. They sweat like we do. They fall like we do. All that kind right. of rah-rah crap that you have to just convince yourself, like, it's just another dude. He may be a good football player, but so am I. So that's where I think Iowa State is lacking, is here.
Yeah.
Not anywhere else.
And I think that – that even has would go back to the thing with Claps in the fourth quarter too.
Yeah.
And it's just that's as hard to turn around as anything in sports, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yep, it is. And that's the thing, is they've got to get one.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where it comes from, they got to get one. Same thing we talked about after Oklahoma State, is you have to get a win, even if you stumble into it. Even if you just happenstance, you know, Texas goes up by 14 and you get a pick six and then they drop the kick return and you get it and score.
Yeah.
Like stuff like shouldn't happen. That it by no means should you be anywhere near that game. And all of a sudden you stumble into something. Just do that. Just
yeah.
That would break this trend of I can't do this, because Iowa State's 1-8 in their last 9, mm-hmm. and they're 0-4 in their last Big 12 games, 0-4 God knows what.
Since they played Kansas last year.
Yeah. So
yeah. Yeah. All right.
It's all up here.
Let's go to the big screen.
So the unspectacular. So the first one I think we'll bring up from a non-unspectacular sense is we'll look at the landing to DeShante Jones play, because this is kind of this is what I mean by an adequate offensive line and adequate offensive performance. So you've got playmakers where you need them, and Iowa State has playmakers at each one of their positions. They've got Alan Lazard, they got Dondre Daly, who had an awful game. Dondre played horribly. He's much better than what he showed. But you got DeShante Jones, you got Mike Warren, you got David Montgomery. And this line is, they're not great, but they're not horrible. Like I said, it's not, don't be afraid of succeed, of playing like normal. So this is going to be a kind of a deep crossing route, and he's going to hit DeShante Jones on a ball that it's released at probably 6.5, 7 feet and stays 7 feet the entire way across. This thing is an absolute just seed. Mm-hmm. And all what happens is you get tackles to rush up the field and you get the defensive tackles to split, and Joel's able to step up. So go ahead and play it. This blocking isn't great. It's not, this is an awesome job by the offensive line, but it's good enough. So these guys, he's getting pushed by and we lose the defensive tackle, but Joel's able to step up and just compete. So Grant, did Iowa State get pushed backwards in the defensive tackles 5 yards? Sure. But did they hold on just long enough to be adequate to let Joel deliver a pass, to let DeShante Jones run for 30? Yes. And this is what, if you're playing a team with this offensive line that is playing against a team that has that much talent, like a Texas, like an Oklahoma, what you have to do is just compete enough to be serviceable, to get stuff like this. Because it's going to be there. We have the playmakers to do it, like you said. We just have to be able to do the thing we're going to do. So go ahead and pull up the landing run, too. So the other thing is, if you have this option of being adequate and good enough, then one of the things that you can do is take advantage of where the deficiency would be. So this is going to be a 3-technique read. Actually, so what this means is we're going to block him, and this is a guy say that's their stud defensive tackle, and we physically can't get him blocked. You can just hide that. Again, if he was the one that put the pressure on the quarterback earlier, but we delivered the ball adequate enough. This one is, say we can't block him, what we're going to do is Fett's going to block out, we're going to combo down to this and then come up to this linebacker, and we're going to take these two for these two. So the center and the left guard are going to go these two, the left tackle is going to go here, and these two are going to get these two. So it's just a traditional, this is just a read play, and we're going to leave him unblocked. If he goes down this way and chases the running back, Joel's going to run right behind him. If he stays in because he sees quarterback, then we're going to give to the running back. So it's like a zone read, but instead of reading this guy, we're reading this guy.
Yep.
So play, and then I'll have you freeze it once you get that read. Freeze. So you see the read is actually back it up like half a second to like right there. So the read you can see is the tackle blocks down as the guard blocks down as a defensive lineman. You're taught if a lineman leaves, you have to follow it down because you can't open up this void. So the guard leaves and the tackle comes down like this, and a shoulders turned read is pull. So we can't block this guy. We know he's quick to read any down block, and this would be dead in the water if we gave it to the running back. Well, we can base block the tight end. We can slip out and get this linebacker, and Joel's just going to squirt right from where he left. So stuff like this. Again, it doesn't have to be great blocks. I mean, look at the front side. Go ahead and play. Look at the front side. We miss completely. It's not – we didn't even get near getting that block done right. It was good enough. We made a read, let everybody happen, and we got 13 yards. So it's not a physicality thing. It's not the line can't physically do it. It's that you have to have the attitude that I'm going to compete my butt off, and if I compete my butt off, something good is going to happen, and we're going to trust the coaches to make the right decision.
Yeah, you can see it looks like it's Patrick Scoggins. He gets beat off the ball.
Exactly.
But he just pushes the guy out of the way.
Yeah, he keeps fighting. He stays engaged. It's not a knockout block, and it's not even particularly a very good block. But he stays competing. He stays fighting for that play, and we pick up 13.
What do you think of Joel Lanning lowering his shoulder on first and 10 and running a guy over?
So the question was, if it wasn't clear, is what do you think of Joel Lanning lowering his shoulder on first and 10? I'm fine with it because who he was lowering his shoulder on is a secondary player. So he's not trying to truck this linebacker. He's trying to truck this safety. And that safety is 190 pounds. I'm fine with 240 on 190. If that's a defensive end, all right, Joel, let's be a little smart now.
Yeah.
Especially because he knows how to protect himself. He's done it enough where there's a certain way you hit where if you hit here like this on the top of your shoulder pad, the front to top of your shoulder pad, that's a lot of force that's bore on your body. But if you know how to run and glance, you actually dip your shoulder like this and it glances off the back of your shoulder pad. So you watch, I mean, if you want to play that again, Joel knows how to take contact. He's not going front of his shoulder pad to this guy. He's going back of his shoulder pad to him. So he's protecting himself by getting a glancing blow, but he's also delivering some force to that guy. So this is, Joel knows how to do this. He knows how, he's fine. He's safe in how he's going about it. But again, if that's 250, if that's 280, hey buddy,
yeah,
we need you to throw. Let's not hurt that other shoulder. So I think the next one we'll go is again, so we'll go to Mitchell Myers. This is again, adequate. Like, we're not looking for a dominating performance, but if you just play with proper technique and a proper competitiveness of what you're doing every day, which number 58 is as consistent as it comes, as consistent as you possibly could be in work, in attitude, in work ethic, in fundamentals, in thinking. And so this is going to be a down block, and this is going to be a reach. So one of these two guys is supposed to block Mitch, but they don't. They mess up. But Mitch trusts his technique, his fundamentals are sound, and we get pushed from inside. So what I'm going to guess is supposed to happen is either these guys are supposed to combo down on Tucker to this one, and we're going to kick out here, and then we're going to get Reed to there. We're going to get Lead to there. So what didn't happen is they blocked down and left Mitch. This tight end arced here, and we left Mitch unblocked. So go ahead and play it. Watch DeMond Tucker and Mitchell Myers. So there's supposed to be a combo. DeMond Tucker fights to the front side. Mitch goes unblocked. This stuff happens. If you watch on any given play, watch one person. Don't watch the whole unit. Because like I showed on that last, that landing run, is Pat Scoggins missed his block. Just almost flat out missed it. And the other, in the ones before, the left guard, Brian Shetta, missed his block. But it was a successful play. If you see the outcome only, you're like, oh man, these guys are good. Everybody's doing things right. On any given play, there is at least one person missing an assignment, at least one person missing fundamentals, and at least one person not doing not having full effort on every single play.
It almost comes down to like where you are in the play that it really matters.
Yeah, and so what Iowa State, again, has to do is just this consistent attitude that I'm going to come in and be excellent on every snap regardless of what happens, because they're going to mess up. Somebody's going to mess up. Nobody's perfect. Alabama's damn good, but they're not perfect. They mess up. They do things that are not fundamentally sound. And that's you as a opponent have to take advantage of that. So it's all consistency and it's all attitude from Iowa State. I think we had another couple plays. There's another play on defense, but I don't know if we need it.
It's not even like Deontay Foreman just killed him either. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had like 30 carries for 130 yards or something like that. I mean, they did pretty good job of bottling him up for most of the game.
It was a couple blown coverages.
Yeah.
It was a couple blown coverages. So this is... Okay, so play this again. So this is going to be a front side read. So you're going to read the front side player who becomes the front side, the contained player. Uh-huh. If he chases down, this is that landing play that we run all the time, or that we ran and ran and ran, where you run halfback out, read this guy. If he plays out, you keep it. If he plays down, you give it. And it's just a front side defensive end read. Well, we do a good job of just being fundamental. So go ahead and play and then freeze. Play freeze. So we do a good job of being fundamental here is that we're preventing him from seeing that there's any front side read. We're preventing him from seeing that there's the ability, because Josh Jollis he pushes out to make Tyrone Swoops in the 18-wheeler package. Mm-hmm. You make him pull because you think that's going to get tackled. And then he plays contents down and Bailey is right there for the tackle. And again, none of this is exemplary. I mean, it's a good play. Bailey does a good job of getting beaten the tackle, but it's because the tackle took bad steps.
Yeah.
On the front side, it's because the tackle didn't climb out to Jollis. Because in order to be good, you just have to not be bad sometimes. It's just be in the right spot, do the right thing, trust your fundamentals, and you're going to be okay. So this is where Iowa State just has to use this week. I don't think we need to watch any more of a vanilla ice cream cone. They don't have to do anything that's spectacular in technique, or they don't have to throw and catch any, you know, bombs or make exemplary plays. It's just do the little things of coming and working every single snap as best you can.
Yeah.
Doing everything, every single assignment as fundamental as you can. It's just one of those things where Iowa State has to be a better version of Iowa State. The same version that we saw in the first three quarters of Baylor, the first three quarters of Oklahoma State, the entire San Jose State game. It's coming in and not accepting the fact that you don't want to be there, or that you're tired, or that you're sore, or that whatever. Is I have to do my job as best I can every time.
So, Adam, I was going to say.
So, Jeff, since there wasn't really a whole lot of video, and we kept that a little bit short, I posed a question, or I asked people for questions on Twitter and on Cyclone Fanatic, and Jared can look on our Cyclone Fanatic Twitter account and ask these questions as well. But someone on Cyclone Fanatic asked this question, and I actually heard a lot of people talking about it too. A lot of people seem to think that Joel holds the ball too long and takes sacks when unnecessary. You know, whether it be even at an end of a game or end of half situations too, he's happened a couple times. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that? Is more offensive line to blame? Does he need to do a better job getting rid of the ball? What's your take on that?
He does. It's all the above. He needs more time because in these past few games, he's gone down a lot. I think there was it four or five sacks against Oklahoma State and eight against Texas. You get sacked 13 times as a quarterback in two games, then your clock is off. So it doesn't necessarily mean you're thinking faster or thinking slower. It's that I know the timing of this route is supposed to come at a certain point. Then I'm supposed to deliver this ball now. Well, if it's not hitting right now, then it's the timing of when I'm supposed to throw it is either too slow or too fast, and it feels wrong. And then I can't, either I have to take off running, or I'm choking and not getting rid of the ball. So the offensive line has to make the quarterback feel more comfortable, but Joel also has to understand none of it's going to be perfect, and you're probably going to take some hits, and you have to get rid of the ball. I think the only time that I've really been mad at Lanning this year is at the end of the Oklahoma State game when he was holding on to the ball to try and make those big touchdown plays. A flat route's fine. Getting the ball out is fine. Let your playmakers make plays. So trust your playmakers, trust your offensive line, and then offensive line, you have to protect more to make the quarterback trust you. So it's a two-way street from protection and from the quarterback.
So if you look at the statistics, Texas was supposed to be one of the worst defensive teams we played all year.
Mm-hmm.
Scored 6 points, got sacked a ton. Baylor, I don't know if Baylor sacked Iowa State at all, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is that more of Texas, even though their stats show that their defense stinks, they're actually pretty good up front. Maybe they're just weaker in the secondary and linebackers than Baylor, and we could just never get to that level against those two teams? Or did Iowa State just have a really bad game?
Iowa State just had a bad game.
I mean, because they couldn't block at all most of that game. I mean, it was Swiss cheese there for a while.
Right.
And they'd been so pretty. I mean, we thought they maybe had turned a page.
Mm-hmm.
So are you worried, or do you think this is just back to the film and get it corrected and they'll be okay going Kansas State in 2 weeks?
I'm confident with where they are going to be because this is a really easy teaching example. You know, when you're riding a skateboard and you start becoming good at it and then you get too cocky. I can't skateboard at all, but I can at least see someone how to do it. And they get too cocky and then they start trying to do like a kickflip or something like that because you're feeling confident in yourself and then your face goes into the ground and then you realize – maybe I'm not ready for that.
I rode a longboard down the hill in front of the Capitol last year. And
did you break your face?
Yeah, well, my whole leg. I still have scars on my leg because I cut my leg up so bad. I fell in the middle of the street. It's not good.
So the Iowa State offensive line is Texas. Or the Iowa State offensive line this week was just like Jared on that longboard, where if you think that you've arrived and you stop working as hard as you need to, then you get embarrassed.
Uh-huh.
You are no longer able to think that you're there. So it's a really easy teaching moment because I'm sure that, again, I can guarantee you I would put a paycheck on the fact that last week's practice was not as good as the weeks before. And now Coach Campbell and Coach Manning can just directly talk to them and say, look, you practiced poorly and you produced poorly. This is a one-to-one correlation. This is not any variables. This is you practiced like crap, you played like crap.
And I think that I remember hearing Coach Campbell say something along the same lines when they played against Iowa, that he just said, we practiced horribly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw it exactly when we get to the game. So, as a player, do you like that the bye week comes at this time?
Oh, I love this.
Okay.
I would love this.
Okay. Adam was asking me if you would like it or not. So.
Yes. We had one bye week after, like, week four in my 5 years that I was there. One. All the rest of them, it would be like, you and I, Iowa, bye, non-conference, schedule. And then you got to run from non-conference through 9 games of conference, bam, 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 bam.
How much better is that even when you look at what you've got coming in your next 5 games when I'd say a lot of people would think 4 of those are even winnable?
Yeah, well, the only one that would be –
or at least 3 of them.
Yeah, the only one that would be more of a stretch would be Oklahoma at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But
well, no, they've got – excuse me, at Oklahoma at home. It's on Thursday night, yeah.
I'm still not sold on Oklahoma's defense.
Yeah.
So if Iowa State doesn't – panic themselves.
West Virginia is the other one that I was thinking might be looking a little more questionable.
Still not. I'm not sold.
Not sold?
I'm not sold. West Virginia is this. And they've, under Dana Holgorsen, they've been this forever. So all of these games are contestable games, especially because you look at Baylor, and Baylor is supposed to be a blowout, and we should have won that game.
Right.
Oklahoma State, having won 15 years in Stillwater, should have won that game. So I'm not ruling any of these out, but I think the nice thing is, like I said, is you get the chance to be more introspective and take a step back and kind of frame set everything of being like, this is where we were, this is where we got to, and we took a step back and now we're here. I want to get back to winning and I want to do this better. So you get to analyze yourself and you get to analyze exactly look at where you're at. And the other thing is it lets everybody get healthy. Like guys like Kamari and guys like Lazard, they're beat up. And to let them recover so they can be at their best coming into these games that, like you said, it's an easier stretch than the first part of the conference that we played at.
Would the standard player, what would they do with their Saturday when they've got the bye?
Your standard player probably watch a lot of football.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to wake up late on a Saturday. You might go in and
catch the picks on game day.
Catch the picks on game day. Yeah, just enough. 10:30.
Yeah.
You might. I think a lot of. I would bet every strength coach has this. The weight room open, and it's optional to go in to do mobility and auxiliary lifts. The beach body muscles and stretch. And so I'm assuming that'll be open. Like when we were there, a bye week on Saturdays, it was open from 7:30 to 11, and you would basically have to go in. Mm-hmm. There was no punishment for it other than being judged.
Yeah.
So you'd go in and you do beach body workout, mobility, and then you come home and you kind of just relax for the whole day of watching football, catching up on some schoolwork. And then, if guys like to go out and have a good time on Saturday night, someone will do that. If you don't, you just kind of chill and stay in on Saturday. But you get to be a normal student.
Yeah.
So a normal student who's super addicted to football is basically how your Saturday goes.
For sure. All right, I've got two more questions. One, I think somebody – was this on the forums or what was this? Somebody asked who right now do you see has the brighter future, Mike Warren or David Montgomery?
Who? I think Mike still because – this season has not gone with the same level that he wanted it to so far. But the sophomore slump is a real thing because no matter how hard you try, you're never going to work as hard as you did to achieve success when you're trying to maintain success.
Mm-hmm.
So with him, learning how to deal with expectations was this offseason. He wasn't able to do it at the level that he needed to. He'd probably tell you is that he didn't work as hard as he could have. He didn't study as hard as he could have. He didn't have the same drive that he could have. So the sophomore slump, that's what it is that you think that you've done enough that you can back off a little bit in your preparation, which slows you down. So I think going into the next season, he has the frame of reference now to say, this is what I did to achieve success. Sort of like what we're talking about with the offensive line is this is what I did to succeed. This is what I did to not have success. I need to work so hard that I'm better than this one.
Yeah.
So I still think Mike has a higher ceiling. Montgomery has a lot to learn from him because he can now learn from one thing that, again, I think this was, I don't remember if this was a Rhodes or a Herman thing. There's two types of experience. There's expensive experience and inexpensive experience. An expensive experience is someone says a chili pepper, a ghost pepper is really spicy. Expensive experience is taking a bite of that ghost pepper and going, oh my God, my face is on fire. Inexpensive experience is watching your buddy do that and go, I am not doing that.
Yeah.
So what Montgomery has the opportunity for is inexpensive experience to watch Mike Warren play and watch him work, seeing that he saw it all last offseason. Coming into summer and fall camp, and now he gets to see what it's like to prepare successfully. So I think Mike has a better ceiling. Long answer to short question still.
What is the ceiling for DeShonte Jones?
God, that kid's good. That kid's good. I don't know if he's Tavon Austin, but Stedman Bailey, granted Stedman Bailey's the all-time touchdowns reception leader at West Virginia. I'm not saying that specifically that he's going to have the all-time touchdowns lead at Iowa State because Alan Lazard, but what he has the capacity to be is a game-changing player from a slot perspective.
Yeah.
Because a guy like him, and I would assume once Trevor graduates and once Lazard graduates that Kenne or DeShonte Jones takes over all the responsibilities for special teams run game. So he is that guy, that Tavon Austin, that Stedman Bailey, where no matter where he's at on the field, you have to account for him and you have to condense space because if he has a phone booth, he's going to get out of it. So you have to put him in handcuffs no matter where he's at, which changes the complexion of your defense. Mm-hmm. It's like Alan Lazard, but a quicker version where Alan's just more powerful than you are, that doesn't matter how hard you try, he's going to outpower you. Where DeShonte is, he's quicker, than you are. And it doesn't matter how hard you try. So it's the same two sides of the same coin where he's got the capacity to be a game changer like number five.
Yeah.
In a different light.
Would I be crazy to say that going into next season, they might be the best receiving duo in the conference?
I wouldn't argue too much. I mean, there's probably some guys at Baylor that are going to be really good. And
yeah.
Washington's left at
Oklahoma
or Washington's
State.
Washington's going to leave at Oklahoma State. I would assume I can't think of anything offhand that would be better. I think there's a White that's the little brother of the other White at West Virginia. I don't know if he's a senior or not. That's probably a pretty good player.
Mm-hmm.
At first glance, 8 and 5 going into next year would be the best tandem.
Definitely.
And then you got guys like Epps and you got guys like Hakeem Butler that are going to be coming back. So Iowa State's position groups are good. Trevor Ryan will be back. They're good. They just need to continue to improve and have the same attitude every single game.
Definitely. Thanks again to our friends over at Agrigold. They know corn. Look them up online, agrigold.com, or give them a call, 1-800-262-7333. Thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure. I'll be on time next time.
What are we going to talk about next week? That look tells me everything I need to know.
Chance the Rapper songs? Chance the Rapper songs.
Thanks for watching, everybody. Have a great week.